Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey, John.
Pretty good, John. How's it going?
Nah, not too bad. It's kind of weird to see you here on a Monday, though. How were your weekends?
Just kind of hung out, did family stuff. How about you?
Did some laundry, looked at some apartments online.
How about you, Laurel?
Well, guys, I actually went on a journey to a magical place called Milwaukee.
Is that traveling minstrel music?
Yeah, you know, I just kind of like keep it handy for when I go on magical journeys over the weekend.
Okay, well, tell us more.
Yeah, so I went to this annual gathering of allies known as the Republican Party of Wisconsin. It was their state convention.
And what was their business while convening?
Well, they gathered to commence an endorsement process where they pick amongst them a leader to place up on a pedestal of endorsement to enter into the campaign season.
We're talking about the endorsement for the Republican primary for U.S. Senate, right?
In case you didn't catch that, yeah.
An endorsement did they make?
They did indeed.
Ooh, did Sir Paul of House Ryan and Sir Scott of House Walker and Sir Reince of House Priebus speak while you were there?
Indeedeth, they were there to speaketh.
We should talk about that.
Well, this is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I am Lady Laurel White.
This week, Laurel tells us a tale. Well, Lady Laurel, will you tell us what is the state Republican convention about? What the heck was going on?
So these conventions are pretty, like, interesting political phenomena across the country. It's like it's an annual gathering of political insiders and people who are super into politics, and they kind of get together. And in an election year, it's a little bit more interesting because they endorse candidates, but there are always times to get together and sort of like reaffirm your party platform, the things that you stand for, to hear from leaders in your party, talk about your accomplishments, talk about your goals, kind of like a Comic-Con without the superheroes and more like
policy. Well, I feel like some Republicans and then Democrats, when they have theirs, think of some of their candidates as superheroes, but
yeah,
it's
sure.
A matter of opinion.
If they're political animals, they probably think of it that way. Like, there's, oh my goodness, is that so-and-so on stage?
Oh,
it is.
For sure, yeah. I mean, there's like the big music, you know, people are played on stage. When State Senator Leah Vukmir took the stage, it was AC/DC's Thunderstruck. And there were like, I was telling John about this earlier, there was like 20 seconds of hype music before she came on stage.
Whoa.
Like normally people, like the music starts and people come out pretty shortly after. But like there was definitely like a tension build kind of thing happening before she came to the stage.
Did they do a special effect with like a bolt of lightning comes down?
You would have. It felt that way, Sean. Like it did. I was like, is the smoke gonna start like curling in from the sides of the stage?
So this all went down on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we waited till Monday to podcast.
Right, because we needed to tell people about it.
Forced you to go on a journey to Milwaukee while Sean hung out with his children and his mom.
I'll cover the Democratic one. And you better save your traveling minstrel band for me.
Sir Sean will update us on that journey.
So you went down to a convention center in Milwaukee on Saturday. You got there really early in the morning and paid for parking. You had to hitch your steed in a parking garage. And then,
sure,
so what happened? What was the day like? How did it begin?
So it's sort of funny because it starts really early. Like the first speaker was scheduled to start at 7:30 on Saturday morning, which
prime slot.
Right, yeah. prime slot. And so I show up at about that time, and there's definitely a sense of like, you know, it kind of starts earlier in the day, and there are some like lower level speakers, people that aren't like super high profile in Wisconsin Republican politics, but they have earned the right to be on this convention stage and like tell people what's going on and what they do for the party. And people are continuing to trickle in. A number of Republicans were in Milwaukee on Friday because they had some grassroots training and stuff. So, and everybody's staying at the same hotel. It's kind of a sleepover camp.
It's for, a yeah. There's know. There's drinking involved.
Yeah, yeah. I think
in between the you know like the Friday and Saturday stuff.
Tankards yeah. full of grog and a jousting competition and dances around the maypole and such.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. So people are kind of you know coming in gradually over the course of the morning with their coffees and like you know varying states of exhaustion, I guess, depending on how much they partied if the night before.
You just put if at the end of the word, and it's medieval.
And I'm staying with the theme. Just throwing that in there to stay on point. Yeah, so the morning kind of, you know, it ramps up, and then by about, I think it was around 11 or so is when the big speakers started. So it was the lieutenant governor, the governor.
So what are they, what, tell people what it's like when these people are at a convention versus, you know, okay, let's take a couple people you didn't mention. Mm-hmm. You cover Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss, the Republican leaders of the legislature all the time mm-hmm. at the Capitol. You mm-hmm. know what they're like there. What are they like when they get transported to this convention and they're on stage and they get their 5 minutes to rev up
them
the
taking
troops?
Like a hay-filled wagon ride from the Capitol. I don't know.
Oh, because yeah. it's yes, because we don't have cars yet.
Yeah.
Yes, it's medieval times. That's right.
Why would they do that, John? That's absurd. They would just take take the Suburban.
Yeah, it is interesting to see them in a different setting. And I think it changes, it depends on the politician, how different they are in that setting versus like just every day in the Capitol. I think it's safe to say that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, he'll give like a pretty lofty speech on the Assembly floor. Or even when he's having his little press avails before a session day where he's kind of briefing reporters on what's going on, he'll be... he's not afraid to use grand language to convey what he thinks is like a very important set of legislation or something. So his speech didn't feel incredibly different. He was talking about, you know, like the legislative accomplishments that Republicans have achieved over the past several years and how important those are as we kind of head into November, if there's going to be a blue wave or things like that. I thought that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald was a little bit more different than I've seen him before, because he's like more pragmatic and things when we talk to him in the legislature. And, you know, he gives speeches on the floor, too, but he's more of the let me check with the caucus, let me check yeah. the temperature of the caucus, you yeah. know, things like that.
But here he's boasting a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
he had one of the best lines, I think, of the convention in terms of like quotableness. I put like little asterisks next to these in my script as I'm taking notes, and this one got like four as he was speaking. It was
four asterisks.
Yeah, right. He said that the blue wave is about to hit a red wall. So his point there was that there's been you know all these Republican legislative accomplishments, and the blue wave that everybody's talking about for November is going to come crashing against this red wall of accomplishments, and so the blue wave isn't going to happen because people are going to acknowledge all the Republicans have done for the state of Wisconsin.
I thought it was the line about that, making MSNBC
yeah,
hosts.
That's the funny
oh, I like the red
night.
Wall, but yeah, he no. did talk about MSNBC hosts.
I thought
crying.
The MSNBC host was more like you know somebody who. His competitive side kind of came out there like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They're going to cry
he did,
when they
yeah.
don't win.
Well, that was, yeah,
night.
That was the continuation of the quote. So it was like, the blue wave's going to crash into the red wall, which I liked. But yeah. I guess, yes, he did say that MSNBC hosts are going to be crying in November because they're anticipating this blue wave and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, we had Scott Fitzgerald being a little bit boastful or combative in the sense of saying that MSNBC journalists are going to be crying. But I think it's interesting also to compare that to Scott Walker, who seemed to have a different take and be sort of hitting home a message we've heard from him recently about that blue wave. He seemed a little bit less...
less boastful and yeah. more like he wants adrenaline to kick in for the delegates, like, there's someone chasing you right now. Run, you know, kind of like, come on, wake up and mm-hmm. get out there and match the urgency of the left.
Yeah. So he started off his speech with a line that's been pretty familiar from him since I think he first used it in January. He said, "We need to wake up," and then got some applause. And he was like, no, let me repeat that. Like, we need to wake up. And then he went into his speech, and the big, I think, overarching message of his speech was what would be gone if Democrats take control of the legislature and the governor's office. So he had this kind of call and response thing going with the audience where he listed all of the legislative accomplishments that Republicans have pushed through in recent years. So he was talking about, like, voter ID and gun laws and the 20-week abortion ban and just like a variety of things. It went on for a while, and he would say the thing, tax breaks for manufacturers, and then he would have the crowd go, gone, so say a thing, gone, say a thing, gone. So it was very like, this would be the consequence of that blue wave, and this is why we need to fight the blue wave.
So it's like a call and response thing about issues to get the base fired up?
Indeed. Yeah.
All right.
That's exactly what it was.
I'm picturing him like a hype man at a hip hop show. You know?
Who loves voter ID?
Yeah.
If you love voter ID, let me hear you say yeah.
Let me hear you say gone.
So, I mean, is it fair to say that unlike other venues, because this is like party faithful, that the speakers, especially like the high profile ones, were really trying to dig in on those base issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they know who they're talking to at events like this. These people are the political diehards. Like, they are there at 9 a.m. on a Saturday in their sparkly red cowboy hats with white stars. That was, like, my favorite fashion accessory of the weekend. This woman had this awesome blinged-out cowboy hat that was red with stars on it, and she was kind of in the middle up toward the stage, so some of the pictures I took had the hat in it, I think. But yeah, these are people who care about politics, who follow politics closely, and who are going to – they are going to be the people who are like, voter ID, yeah! So they when politicians give speeches at these events, they know that they're speaking to that person.
So you talked briefly about how Sir Paul of House Ryan gave remarks. And in this case, it was specifically about hanging up his shield and his sword. What did he have to say?
Well, that's right. Let me tell you the tale of the farewell address of Sir Paul. It just makes it so much grander, doesn't it? I just love that music. So Paul Ryan's farewell speech was, there was definitely a sense of kind of pomp and circumstance to this speech, because he, when he said, when he came out for the beginning of his remarks, you know, this was like his 26th state Republican convention or something. So he's been around, obviously, Wisconsin Republican politics for a really long time. And a number of people that took to the stage, even as they were talking about their issues or their campaign or whatever, kind of did a tip of the hat to Paul Ryan before his speech. And after his speech, Governor Walker came out and gave him a, you know, the classic Wisconsin politician gift, which is the Packers jersey with their name on the back. So it was like Ryan, the number one, because he's the first congressional
a
district.
A tunic of the Klan Packers.
Exactly. A tunic, a ceremonial tunic was bequeathed upon Sir Paul. What I thought was interesting about his speech, and I wasn't sure which way he would go with this, was that he really focused more on his legislative accomplishments, the position of Republicans in Washington, D.C., and what he thinks is kind of their track record and the impact that they've had since President Trump has been elected. He really sold, like, these are the number of bills we've passed. These are the things that we've done. And that was really the big focus of his speech. He didn't really talk about the blue wave, hardly at all. It got a quick mention. So he was really kind of staying away from that election politics stuff, which has been kind of this cloud looming over his retirement, right? I mean, so many people have been talking about what him leaving means for Republicans in the fall, like a hit to their morale, a hit to their fundraising potentially. And maybe it was a sign of him acknowledging some of that sensitivity or something, the fact that he just really didn't come close to it in this speech.
If he actually wants to retire, he won't give one of these speeches again next year. I mean, he could probably come back and give a speech at convention, you know, whenever he wants. But if he really wants to retire, it could have been his sort of his swan song speech.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I felt like it was. And he mentioned the job of the speaker being something that an empty nester should do, not somebody with kids. So he really he drove home that whole, I'm going to go be a family man now, and that's my goal.
Well, that all sounds nice, but I really like intra-party conflict. So can we talk about the endorsement process now?
Yeah, let's
do it. The rough and tumble clashing of the swords, the ceremonial joust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks to the band.
Man, I don't know what I would, do without those guys. So great. So this was fascinating for me because this is the first time that I've covered a state convention where an endorsement has taken place. So it's a really unique thing. You've probably seen it happen on TV when you're watching the national conventions and stuff. Everybody has the placards for their county or state in the national instance. And what they do is, like, there are these nomination speeches. So somebody comes up and gives a speech saying, I nominate this person. And then another person comes up to second the nomination. So there's, like, kind of this hype-up thing. Then the candidate comes out and gives a speech. And then at the end, they pass out these ballots, and people go around and gather them in their bright yellow vests, walking around, like, monitoring everything. It's, like, fair and safe elections in the back of their traffic vest. And they read the ballots. I'm just doing a whole summary right here, and then we can go into detail. But I just, like, I love the chronology of this. So, like, they go up, they take their ballots upstage, and then they, like, read them, and it's an unofficial tally, and you see the percentages blown up on the screen, and then they go back and count it for the official thing. But it's very, like, you're just watching it all happen in real time, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, if you like hearing results from 72 counties, yeah. Slowly.
Yes, yeah. You're, like, tracking the alphabet as they're going through.
Saturday afternoon, another county.
Yes.
Before we get to more chronology, how do you sum up, like, what was the pitch from Leah Vukmir? Mm-hmm. I am this candidate, and Kevin Nicholson, I am this candidate. Like, you can boil down their pitch to pretty, concise. I'm a fighter. I'm an outsider. I mean, what were they saying?
You just spoiled it, Sean. Those were the words I was going to use.
All right, done.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
but
that's
which one is which?
Yeah, I don't even know yet. Who's a fighter? Who's an outsider?
Leah Vukmir characterized herself as a fighter. She called herself scrappy. She called herself an underdog. She said that she's, a proven conservative that has the credentials and the track record. To do change in Washington.
You know me. Did she do the, like, kind of appeal to delegates? Because she's been really active at these conventions for years.
Yeah, she's been around for a long time and has the support of a lot of high-profile people in Wisconsin. The person that gave her seconding speech, the person that seconded her nomination was Reince Priebus. Kevin Nicholson's argument, as you mentioned, is kind of on the outsider. So he talked a lot about how he used to be a Democrat. He's from a family of Democrats. So he came to being a Republican in this very kind of genuine way based on his life experience. And it was very thoughtful. And he thought that because of that, he could appeal to a broad swath of voters who might not identify with a political party or might not have identified with being a Republican in the past. So he's definitely playing to that message that we've heard a lot from, like, President Trump of, I am a political outsider and I'm going to go in and shake up the system.
And so who prevailed in this battle of little paper ballots and yellow hazard vests?
It was Leah Vukmir. She came away with 73% of delegates' votes, which sounds like a pretty handy win. But I think it's important to note that you can't get the party endorsement unless you get at least 60%. So this has to be, like, a pretty good majority vote by delegates to get the party endorsement. If nobody gets to that percentage, they just don't endorse that year. So she obviously got to 60, and there was a cheer when it became apparent that she'd crossed that threshold, and ended up with 73%.
So I guess the question now is, what does that endorsement mean? Because mm-hmm. Ron Johnson talks about how important it was for him back in 2010. He kind of came out of nowhere and the party endorsed him, and he was henceforth, he was the candidate for Republicans that year. There were still other candidates in the race, but some of them dropped out and Ron Johnson was the guy. So mm-hmm. what do you think it means in this case?
Well, I think a lot of people have been saying after the convention that for Leah Vukmir, it doesn't mean a ton because it was sort of expected for her to get the party endorsement in a way. Because she had the high-profile support from people like Reince Priebus, and, you know, Scott Walker hasn't endorsed her, but his wife has, and his son works on her campaign. So I think it would have been a bigger deal if she hadn't gotten it. It would have put her more on the defensive. It was kind of a tough position for her in a way, because it's sort of like, if you win, well, people were expecting it. If you don't win, it's horrible.
That would have been, yeah.
Yeah.
So if she had come up short to Kevin Nicholson, it would have been
right,
more difficult
right.
for her.
And Kevin Nicholson's people are pushing, this really wasn't a big deal for us. This wasn't something we'd ever really spent that much time or energy on achieving the party endorsement. And, you know, this is just a room of 200 and some people, and we're more concerned about the entire state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. They don't want to minimize it too much because that is the grassroots, and mm-hmm. you'd want them to like work for you if Kevin Nicholson were to prevail in August. You wouldn't want the grassroots or the Republican Party to be turned off from him. So it seemed like he tried to walk that line.
Mm-hmm.
I like this quote from Leah Vukmir's campaign after the endorsement, though. Her campaign, this is not from her, but her campaign said, quote, "It's time for Kevin Nicholson to respect the will of the people that have delivered Governor Walker and Senator Johnson into office time and time again and leave the race." So Leah Vukmir was saying, "I won the endorsement. Get out. The people have spoken."
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, by people, she means the party faithful who were in the room at the convention center, as opposed to the people who will be voting in the Republican primary in August.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know if a campaign feels it has to say something like this. I guess you want to take what momentum you can from an event like this. But mm-hmm. the idea that he would drop out because he didn't get the endorsement, he has a ton of money from outside groups, particularly a handful of outside wealthy people in super PACs. And he is, you know, from what we've seen, they're still both basically unknown to most voters, but Kevin Nicholson has had ads running on his behalf for a while now, and it's kind of sinking in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he's going to drop out of the race.
I don't think so either.
He will not dismount his mighty steed as they ride forth into battle.
He's not returned into the stable just yet.
Well, thank you, Lady Laurel, for that magical tale. I feel like you really took us there.
Yeah, I felt like we went on the journey with you. Thank you very much. I'm going to have to ask the band if they'd come back in the first weekend of June when I take my own journey to the magical land of Oshkosh for the
Ooh.
State Democratic Convention.
Well, Sir Sean Johnson is WBR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Lady Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And Sir John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If a podcast that fills your heart with joy and your belly with mirth is what ye seek, then your quest is but a short one, for thou canst subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes. It's also available on Google Play and many other fine podcast apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes going back ages and ages anytime you like at wpr.org/politics.